As long as you still think in the terms of love as a verb that is something you give to someone else in any conditional fashion, I'll give it to you because you deserve to be loved. Because you're really good. She's very lovable. Lovable. Forget it. That's an ego trip. Straight ego trip. Sure, we can all love lovable people. Lovable people guarantee they won't hurt you. That's what lovable people are. It's pretty safe to love. I can love you because you'll allow me to stay me. But what happens if through my loving you, I cease to be? Like the tarantulas, when they mate, one of them eats the other, doesn't it? Or the praying mantis? Praying mantis, huh? Yeah. Through my love for you, I'm going to cease to be. I used to do therapy among college students in a few incarnations back, and I would always find this interesting dynamic of couples who would meet and they'd be attracted to one another, and then they'd start to get close, and then one of them would crack first, you see, and start to pull back, and that would allow the other one to race forward, and then the other one would race forward and then feel unrequited love and then pull back, and the minute that one pulled back, the other one would race forward, and they kept going with this dance. See, they couldn't get any closer together because they couldn't stand the amount of light and energy and here-ness that was generated by that, so they'd keep moving like this. And, you know, if you did it week by week, you know, I'd have, like, both of them in therapy. And I just, like, keep a little chart, you know, of who's running after who today. Everybody knew the game. Everybody knew the dance. Supposedly, nobody was conscious of anything, you know. He doesn't love me. She wants all my time. Oh. If I marry her, I will be surrendering my freedom. That's a tough one. Want to surrender your freedom? If I don't marry her, I'm going to be obsessed with her. But I'll have my freedom. He who seeks that kind of freedom must die. Simple as that. And one of the techniques of exploring those places is to make love to something which is reasonably safe to make love to. Lots of people make love to their pussycats or their dogs or they feel very loving towards people at a great distance. And to open that channel of love, open the fourth chakra, open the heart, open this whole place inside, there are many techniques which are listed under a thing called bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, yoga of love. which involve, in effect, having one of a variety of kinds of love affairs with God. Ram, 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 Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. Ramakrishna's love for Kali, the Divine Mother. The gopis' love for Krishna. The love for Jesus in the West. A love that is so safe because of the purity of the person you're loving. So safe that you can love and love and love and nothing will get you so scared you'll pull back. And you can keep loving and loving and loving and loving until you go right through the doorway. So safe. See, when I hung out with Maharaji, I realized there wasn't anything he wanted from me. There was nothing that would arouse paranoia in me from him. He wasn't sending out one cue that would get me running away. It was all like a wide open pathway, and as fast as I could cut through my stuff, I could go down it, and there was always more light and more warmth and more love. But I had grown up in such a heavy, heavy universe of conditional love. Be good or no love. There are those that are lovable and there are those that aren't. How can anybody love a little boy who does a thing like that? I remember taking LSD once in the meditation house at Millbrook and regressing, going back and back and back into earlier and earlier experiences, and suddenly hearing myself scream out with a voice of like a 9-year-old, please love me, please love me. Because the image was of my mother saying, get away from me, I don't love you. I can't love you. Please love me. I'll be good, I'll be good, I'll be good. I promise I'll be good. Please love me. Because the light had been turned off. The light had been turned off. The hype was that we were involved in, mother and I, was that she had the love to give. That it was something that she could take away from me. Because, in fact, the thing that she could do was she was a stimulus that could turn on a place in me where I was love. But I didn't know that. I thought that the love resided in her, and it was hers to give or take away. And I needed it. I needed it to feel good. Some of you have tried sitting alone in meditation, and you get an experience of feeling lonely. What does that mean? How could you feel lonely? What does that mean? I need somebody else. For what? To reassure me that I'm all right? What? I pondered a long time on I love you more than you can ever love yourself. I love you more than you can ever love yourself. I, ego, can only love in a finite sense. And here is Mahabhava, who says he is an avatar, and he is saying, I love you more than you can ever love yourself. He's saying, I love you with infinite love. You can only love with finite love. So my love is greater than your love. And as long as you are you, you can only love finitely. And only if you give it up and become one with me can we both be in infinite love. And then there is no you to love. I love you more than you can ever love yourself, as long as there is a you around. Once you disappears, the whole meaning of the statement ceases to be. And the lesson Maharaji gave me was that no matter what I was or wasn't, not because of my deservingness at all, there he was full of love, independent of my deserving, whether I deserved to be loved or not. I mean, here he had shown me in specific ways that he could read my mind at all times. He knew everything I was thinking all the time. And I would go back to the temple and I would have some horrible, horrible thought. Like, seeing a devotee kneeling before Ram and saying, boy, I'd really like to make it. Pretty horrible. You're a priest in the temple, and you're walking around in your holy garb, and you look at somebody kneeling in prayer, and you say, boy, wouldn't that be a gas? Yeah. That's not a thought you're supposed to have. What do you do with that? There were some times when I would have, like, dreams of aggression or sex that would be so horrible, I think, really, I ought to get out of the temple. I'm just contaminating the whole temple just by my presence because I'm such a really evil cat. It's so full of bad karma. And I shouldn't even stay around here. I just can do nothing but a disservice to everybody around me. I'm really such rotten through and through. Really rotten. And then Maharaji would come along, and I knew he knew all this, see? I knew he knew it all, because he kept, like, little things. He would show me he knew the little things all the time. And he'd look at me with absolute, total love. I think, come on, baby, how can you love me that much? You see what a bad cat I am. What are you doing? Don't you have any discrimination? But the thing was that what he was loving in me was not all those thoughts and all those behaviors. He was loving that in me which was love. And I was identifying myself with my own thoughts and my behaviors and therefore feeling like he couldn't love that thing that I was. He wasn't making the mistake of identifying me with my thoughts and me with my behaviors. That was my problem, not his. He saw, there you are, your light. You are light. You're just pure light. Wow. Whew. Oh. You're the sun. He saw that. Now, that discrepancy, I had to keep facing that discrepancy. I'd go back and say, how can he conceivably be loving me? What is going on here? He can't do that. You know, is he some kind of a nut? I'm just not lovable that way. And then ever so slowly, I started to entertain the possibility. See, what happened was when I'd be around him, I'd feel really beautiful. Feel really beautiful. Because he touched that place in me where I was light, where I was merely pure energy, where I was pure consciousness. He kept touching that place. He get me so extraordinarily high just by being around him. But the minute I get by myself, you see, I'd have some of these thoughts or these acts, and I'd immediately identify with them, and then I would feel bad and unlovable and like I had to be punished, and then I would imagine that he was rejecting me and throwing me away, and then I'd go see him again, and there he was, all love again. Kept doing this thing to me. See, there's a very interesting issue here that about just a sequence that's kind of a perplexing thing. I met Meher Baba in the spirit through an LSD experience. I had taken LSD, and I was sitting with a picture of Meher Baba. And I started to hallucinate, and I hallucinated that I was in the Greek hills. And it was a beautiful day just like this, and I was out walking in the fields, and there were flowers in the fields. And I came up over a mountain path, and I saw this man coming the other way, and we met, and it was sunny, and the fields were full of flowers. And it was one of those joyous days, and we just started to pass on the path, and our eyes met just of a feeling of delight to meet at this moment. And I looked into his eyes, and there was something I saw in his eyes that I had never seen before in anybody's eyes. And I thought, what is that thing I'm seeing? I thought, is that look wisdom? No. What could it be? And as I looked closer, I realized that what I was seeing was a look that said, I am totally fulfilled to look at you for eternity. You are enough for me forever. Imagine anybody looking at you like that. I mean, they might say, wow, let's be together now. But to say, we are here for eternity, it is enough to look at you forever? For eternally. It's okay, here I am, it's all enough, forever. Not only for this lifetime, but for eternity. And I said to myself, well, I certainly don't know me well enough to commit myself for eternity to anybody. But for now, it would be a groove to look at you. Mm-hmm. This all took place in that quick moment when you catch somebody's eye and you go through that whole process. And I started to look at him, and it turned out we looked at each other for some 3 or 4 hours. And then I started to come down, and I realized I was looking at a book, and that the page would yellow, and I would be done looking long before he was at the rate we were going. And I felt like I had been taken, I'd been had. You know? And in my agitation, I turned the book, and then the book was looking at a bottle of squirt next to me. And I looked with horror at the fact he was looking at the bottle of squirt with a look, I could look at you for eternity. I am totally fulfilled. It's all enough. I grabbed the book and brought it back to me and looked into it. With, like, it's one thing to look at me. You know? I mean, I'm not good, but I'm, you know. Maybe if you're crazy enough, you might want to look at me for eternity, but not, you know. A horrible green bottle of squirt. No deposit, no return. But there were the facts of the matter. Fact of the matter was he was looking at the bottle of squirt the same way he was looking at me, and that was the way it was. I had a face. Who could that human being be that could do that? I mean, let's just say this was, after all, a photograph. Somebody had taken the shot of him. Let's just assume now that that's the way he always looks. It wasn't somebody said, okay, get your eternal love look now, Meher Baba. We're going to take your picture. Ready? And he looks like I could look at you forever. They take the picture and he says, all right, now get away. It's not like that. Because everybody that ever saw Meher Baba looked into his eyes and got that same hit. And the expression was, once he gets his ganaz into you, his look into you, he never lets go. See, that is a statement made about Meher Baba. I am the divine beloved who loves you more than you can ever love yourself, he says.